If you haven't already, explore the many ways to connect with our show. Watch full uncut conversations on YouTube, gain AIA-approved continuing education credits through Arcademy, and make sure to check us out and follow us on social media at Detailed Podcast. This is an original podcast by RCAT. Try the number one most used website for finding building product information and save time and money. No registration is required with RCAT, so try it today and get ahead on your next project. Visit RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com.
It was saying lots of different things. I mean, for me, it looked exactly like the ultrasound of my shoulder when after a ski accident, you know. And then I looked at another part and thought, you know, it could almost be like a, you know, 10-week pregnancy scan. You know, it just has this kind of feeling of medical imagery as well. And then we thought, you know, it still looks like water. It looks like something flowing. So that whole idea of life is coming through in the pattern making.
Early days with the contractor, we sat down with, this is how we're documenting. Are you okay with that? And their preference was for the color coding. They didn't want a dimension set out thing. It's like, well, people can see the colors, we know what the color means, and it was a much more streamlined way of communicating where everything goes. And you can sit back, you can look at the colored elevation in front of the building, go, yep, it's marrying up.
This is Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. I am your host, Charisse Lakeside, senior specification writer at RDH Building Science and fondly known as the CSI Kraken. We will speak with professionals who share their insights into the most complex, interesting, and odd building conditions and the ingenuity it took to make it work. Join me as I pull back the curtain on the building industry and uncover the lessons learned. You'll gain valuable knowledge to help you better navigate your next project. My guests today are Ruth Wilson, principal, and Jaden Peacock, I love his last name, senior associate at Architectus, with 12 offices in Australia and New Zealand. With 30 years of experience in Australia and Europe, Ruth Wilson's diverse and accomplished career has seen her manage large, complex projects and direct multidisciplinary teams towards buildings and places that exist at the forefront of innovative design. Jaden is a versatile architect and accredited Green Star professional with experience across education, public, transport, infrastructure, justice, and defense projects. A natural problem solver, he excels at leading multidisciplinary teams and distilling complex requirements into cohesive design solutions. The project we're talking about today is the Kangan Institute Health and Community Center of Excellence in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. But before we get started, don't forget to take a look at the project photos and drawings as you listen along. You can click the link in our show notes or visit www.rcat.com/podcast. How do you inspire the next generation to pursue careers in the vital, yet often undervalued, caring professions such as nursing, childcare, and disability care? In Melbourne's northern suburb of Broadmeadows, Kangan Institute's new Health and Community Center of Excellence, or HACO, suggests that architecture itself can play a powerful role.
So our client is TAFE. So TAFE stands for Technical and Further Education. So it's a vocational stream of education in Australia. And this campus is in one of the western suburbs of Melbourne. So think of kind of, you know, low rise, mainly residential town centre with buildings kind of like the 4 and 5 levels. It's very diverse socioeconomically, and lots of different cultures have come to settle there over the decades. The need for this project, or what instigated this project, was a critical shortage in professionals in the what we call the caring professions. So nursing, aged care, childcare, disability care. So the projections of the deficits in those occupations are just terrifying in Australia. So there's a huge impetus to up-train, to attract people into those occupations, train them up and get them into the workforce as quickly as possible. So that was really the first problem that this project was trying to solve. But there is a campus out there already from probably built in the 80s, you know, a little bit long in the tooth, as we say, needs a lot of love. Time for it both to be high capacity, but also giving a better learning experience for those students. So this was the first building in that campus transformation.
Central to the client's goals was establishing the scale of learning programs and student capacity the Institute could accommodate, a determination that directly shaped the project's budget.
They had done a business case where they set out the training that the facility could support in terms of, you know, the number of hours, number of graduates per annum. That became a business case that goes to government. They successfully secured the funding, so which is, you know, not always easy. There's not endless funding around. So it was fantastic that they received that funding. So in Australian dollars, that was $60 million for the whole project. My maths isn't quick enough to transfer that into American dollars, but maybe around 35, 40 million American. And their mandate was to deliver this project. So when we came on board, there wasn't even a location for it on campus. We had to start from scratch and really find where the best place for this new building was and then, you know, scale it up, work out how big it was and what it would contain in terms of training. They didn't have these offerings to a great extent on that campus, these educational offerings. So it was very much from first principles working with our colleague, Dr. Callie Frith, who's one of the very valued members of the Architectus team, who is an education space strategist. So she goes in and works with the educators to understand how they train and how, you know, what spaces they need to deliver their courses. So it was a very kind of from first principles type of project.
Across three levels, the project hosts diverse modes that seamlessly flow from one to the next. This flexibility mirrors the project's blended learning model and design, which combines digital autonomy with hands-on engagement.
It's a three-story building, just shy, around 6,500 square meters. We mentioned that it's first of a master plan, so it's trying to look at the immediate needs now as well as the future needs. So it's always sort of intention of what it's trying to do. But inside the building, it's a mix of education facilities, which is simulations or health simulation spaces where we might have a nursing bed, as well as your classroom spaces and all the informal and breakout spaces in between. It's a combination of how people use the space in terms of blended learning. You've got classrooms and you've got hands-on industry-based simulation learning, as well as digital technologies with VR and AR integration. So it's how all of those things work together, and it's not a one or all, it's the overlapping component of it. We've got one space that is got a big digital backdrop. So if you picture being able to set up a scenario and be able to change the audio around the space and the backdrop wind, so you can pretend that you're in a hospital with all the noise and the chaos that's happening through there. And then you take it to the other end and you've got these digital tables that dissect the body, and you've got this body in a digital table, and you can sort of move the cut plane through it, and you can change how it looks. So there's a huge array of technologies that's been implemented into this project, and it changes how students can learn and what they can do within the TAFE.
Okay, I have to ask, when you say body, like are we talking a 3D image? Are we talking a robot? Are we talking a human? What kind of body is this?
So it's a table that is a screen. So a horizontal surface, a screen down, and there is a digital human body that lies in there, and you can move the visual plane through the body. So it sort of cuts and dissects it, and you can change the layers through that. So you can turn it on so it's only showing the vascular system and the bones, and you can play around with it in many different ways. But it's hyper realistic. It's not a cartoon simulation. It feels like it looks like a body.
I think it is actually taken from proper imagery, isn't it? Because, you know, for those of us who've learned anatomy, you know, with the plastic, you know, perfect kind of innards of a person, and then to see what it actually looks like with all these fat layers and everything squashed up against each other.
The building occupies a pivotal site between Broadmeadows Town Park, the Civic Center, and the Institute, asserting its role as a connector of community, education, and place.
It's quite a large, sprawling campus, but there's not a lot of big pockets of space. And well, we mentioned it before, that this was a first of a ambitious master plan, so there's sort of stage 2 and 3 yet to come. So there was discussions of where this should go, and we ended up landing on sort of almost like a new front door to the building, but then this isn't the entry or the admin building. So it's quite a prominent location so that they can advocate the new campus, advocate for new work, and it addresses the future orientation of the campus. So that's really the tension that it always had early days with where does it go, how does it orientate, how do people interact with it, and how does it interact with the existing campus versus a new campus that we want to go through. So, yeah, there was very robust conversations early on debating all of these. And then we're sitting right next to the town park, which the campus never integrated with. It was quite a separate thing. You know, you had quite, it wasn't large, but it was quite dense, garden sort of bush space in between that was fenced. And, you know, there was conversation about how does the campus give back to the community? How is it approachable? How can we bring an element of passive surveillance to the area? How can we increase that experience? So then the conversation opened up, well, maybe we need to do work on the town park. So then that conversation grew and the project grew. We had to put money aside. But all of this is happening in a project that is government funded, that had a set dollar, the $60 million that Ruth mentioned before, that could not budge. We had a time frame that was committed that could not budge, and you've got a client and ourselves, and we're all trying to, you know, this highly aspirational project that is trying to attract people into this desperate need of employment and skill training. So it's trying to do a lot, and so there's plenty of challenges through there to make that all sing together and not miss any one of those beats.
So what did you end up with on the site? Were you able to find a way to interact with that park?
Absolutely, yeah. That's one of the, you know, huge successes of the project. So there's no longer a fence. You flow from the park to the new building.
And one of the key decision points of that is, you know, how does this happen? Because it's, I guess, the funding is for the TAFE on their land. That's what they're doing. The town park and the garden and everything separating the two is on council's land, which is typically funded by council projects. But getting all the bodies together, we ended up funding that work through the project, so coming out of our budget. And then we worked through with council about how that needs to work. And the council have plans on how that park is developing over time, which they're doing in incremental steps. So we had to work with that. And, you know, it ended up being a real success. But, you know, that didn't come without a lot of work and a lot of discussions early on, but it had to be done early so that we can make sure that money was set aside and that those ambitions were realized. If it came late in the project, it would have been a different story. But addressing these things early was the key. So the park is on the south side of our building, and over here that's our shady side. So we're able to have a really highly transparent building through that connection. So our building faces the park. The landscape blends through. The idea of lighting and passive surveillance is something that just comes naturally through that. And we're able to, with building orientation, turn and protect the building from the north. So the building and the park, they speak to each other, and then the master plan grows across that through this access that builds upon that connection between public park and TAFE campus.
A hand-laid brick facade curves and flows with sculptural softness. Its patterns inspired by the Yeroque and Mooney Ponds creeks, as well as the cellular forms of ultrasound imagery.
At Architectus, look, we always work with, you know, honest intrinsic materials. So we're not the architects that build something and then clad it with something else. So we want the materials we use to be self-finished, to be, you know, highly durable, to be, you know, intrinsically beautiful. And we think brick is one of those incredible products that, you know, looks good 30 years later, you know, good as the day it was laid. And in this part of Melbourne, there is a significant brick building, which is the council chambers. So there was a kind of a precedent for a kind of a civic quality to brick. And on the flip side of that, there's a lot of low quality building stock around this part of Melbourne, which is more, you know, your kind of aluminium cladding and materials that degrade very quickly. So we were keen to give this building a civic quality, and we chose bricks, and we were able to, you know, prioritize that in the cost planning that we could afford them. But it's a big building. It's very big. And one of the things we do with our TAFE work is really think about, we call it the long life loose fit. So we think about creating a structural grid that can adapt over time. So we generally end up with quite rectilinear buildings because of that. It is just inherently the most functional grid. So we started massing up the project, and it was feeling quite bulky and big. And we did window, you know, put our punched openings windows, the south facade that Jay was talking about, but we still felt that it could cope with another layer of something happening in the building. We look for inspiration from our context. As Jay said, there is an actual waterway through this suburb, which the suburb has turned its back on. So we wanted to bring that back to light. And this is also part of, we were consulting with First Nations traditional elders. So in Australia, we call that designing with country. And they were keen to surface the natural attributes of this area. So the things that would have been here before white man, basically. So the waterway would have been the thing that would have been crucial to the original traditional owners. So we thought, as a starting point, that could be something we'd explore in pattern making. And then it was actually a designer on our team, Kimberly Pakshong, who took that, and she did this incredible work using digital tools and Rhino to map different patterns. And then as it evolved, we actually realized that it was saying lots of different things. I mean, for me, it looked exactly like the ultrasound of my shoulder when after a ski accident, you know. And then I looked at another part and thought, you know, it could almost be like a, you know, 10-week pregnancy scan. You know, it just has this kind of feeling of medical imagery as well. And then we thought, you know, it still looks like water. It looks like something flowing. So that whole idea of life is coming through in the pattern making.
You know, we're doing detailed elevations of the brick themselves. The way we did that was we set up a grid system across the building because the pattern was all modelled in 3D through the Rhino scripts, and we were able to colour code. So then we had bricks that were stepped out a certain distance, were a colour, and then went across, and we're able to do a grid where we can go on site and check and count bricks to make sure the patterning, you know, nothing sort of slipped a run or two. So there was this due diligence across the board. And you know, early days with the contractor, we sat down with, this is how we're documenting, are you okay with that? And their preference was for the colour coding. They didn't want a dimension set out thing. It's like, well, people can see the colours, we know what the colour means, and it was a much more streamlined way of communicating where everything goes. And you can sit back, you can look at the coloured elevation in front of the building, go, yeah, it's marrying up.
At ground level, the masonry facade lifts to reveal generous shopfront glazing, drawing the community into the life of the building and placing education on display. Positioned along the edge of the public park, this transparency blurs the boundary between institutional learning and civic space, inviting passerby to engage with the building's purpose.
So really it was deep in this theme of honest materials. So we used concrete as a structural system, and that is also visible on the outside of the building and in the colonnade. So the colonnade, which is in the area between the building and the park, is a really key feature of the project. That's the way you enter the site and the building. So a really generous covered way where students can gather and gives shelter from the sun in summer and rain in other seasons. So the concrete is exposed, and once again, our contractors, who were Hutchinson Builders, did an incredible job of the concrete. And then the window assemblies are a terracotta kind of colour, a little bit metallic, but that is an applied finish. That is a powder coat, and you'll see on the images they are kind of shaped windows that give a sense of depth in the facade. And importantly, on the ground floor, there's a lot of glass. So we wanted people to walk past and understand what was happening in the project. And this ties back to that early intent of attracting new people to this field of study. So on the campus, I think almost every TAFE in Australia does Adult Migrant English Program, which is for people new to Australia to come and get some English skills. And what the TAFE has found is that it's sometimes that cohort, just by being exposed to what else is happening on the campus, that sparks their curiosity about studying something further once they've finished their English language program. And so we were keen to grab hold of that. So we knew that if we organized our building so that those students were actually walking past the windows and looking into the windows, seeing those incredible things that we just talked about, you know, the layered augmented reality kind of person. You know, there's also a lot of physical models, you know, the kind of simulation models you see in health training. And yeah, just interesting. So you're walking past classrooms, you're seeing people your age kind of in there doing interesting things. And from what we've heard, it's really worked. So their enrollments are really, really strong, much stronger than they actually mapped. So so far, the theory is working.
It was a big desire for us to make the south as transparent as possible. So with our engineering team, we conducted full glazing calcs across the building so that we can map with the mechanical systems that's going through here to enable a very transparent glass with a more tinted glass to the north for protection. And the scale of the windows do change from the north, so we've got more protected windows still providing the daylight into the spaces, and what spaces we had adjacent to north facades changed too. There were more of the simulation spaces where you're working at the task at hand, and then classroom spaces where you might find yourself just looking out the window a little bit. There, what's overlooking the garden or the town park. The building facade itself through the Green Star needed to meet an anti-tightness rating and testing. It was real industry leading standards that the air testing came back at, and that came through a really robust collaboration between us and the contractor about getting the insulation right, the air tightness, all the taping right, and the detailing between the concrete hobs at the end of the edge with the steel coming in above, how the brickwork sat with it, and making sure that everything could be taped down and finished correctly. So I hadn't gone through the air tightness process before, but it is a detailed one. It is a nervous one because you put all this work in, they bring the machine out, they're running the numbers. It was well above the Green Star standard that we're trying to achieve.
The interiors offer a diverse mix of environments, simulation labs for hands-on learning, formal classrooms for structured study, and commons designed to foster informal collaboration.
So they do vary a bit. Everything's educational and collaborative, but we have what we call a simulation. We have multiple simulation spaces, and they're all slightly different. But if you pictured a hospital ward where you might have a number of beds in a single area. So we've got a nursing simulation space which has 8 beds, and that represents a hospital ward. And each one of those beds has all the equipment in the bedhead behind, including they don't have all the gases, but we do have oxygen that gets pumped through. So, you know, they can press all the buttons, they can act in an emergency. It is set up like you're in a hospital. We've also got a pathology lab. So this is another simulation space where they've got chairs where they take blood from mannequins, they take blood from themselves, they practice doing needles. We've got another simulation space which is sort of high fidelity models in there, where a instructor would be in the control room and they set up a scenario where the mannequin can talk through, they can vomit, they can do all sorts of things, and the rest of the class is sitting adjacent to them with screens, digital connection into it, but also a one-way glass screen. So people are watching, they're assessing each other as they go through these simulations, and some of these simulations can be terrifying. They're going through life and death situations. So, you know, these really detailed simulation spaces. We have our classroom spaces, which is your more typical. We've got loose, flexible furniture that can be moved around in multiple different ways, but we've got a screen up the front, a teacher that would be directing and working through the space. We've also got a double-story, two-level, multi-purpose gallery space, and it's got a retractable seating that can come out, and they can have large gatherings there, and it can be pulled away for this fully adaptable multi-purpose space. And that has a curtain that can wrap around, and then a full VR virtual reality backdrop and screen and projectors come down and can display on this screen, which can provide the ability to run scenarios and to be able to run scenarios that could be mimicking sort of quite a dangerous or a stressful environment, something that they can't do in a physical environment, but they can really test the limits of what can be done on campus. And then we have our staff rooms. That a big part of the brief was to have real attractive staff facilities so that staff want to come and work. And there are so many staff that are on the existing campus that have migrated into this building because of its facilities, which is quite funny and really nice to hear. And then there's all the circulation and breakout. And so not a lot of the circulation that we've got is habitable. So we've got furnishings that we'd say in a more active breakout center where people might be moving past, but then we've also got breakout and study spaces right at the top of the building that overlook the park that are really quiet and passive. So there's sort of that mixture of social and focused study.
With a sense of calm at the forefront, Uplifting Finishes use a restrained palette of timber, concrete, and glass with expansive views of the country beyond.
Look, I think the interior strategy came back to our overall strategy of how do we attract people into these occupations, and back to that conversation about how special a vocation is. So I think where Jay and I ended up was actually saying, okay, that someone who has actually had that vocation awoken in them, that is such a special thing, and let's show them how valuable it is by giving them a place to learn and work together that in one hand takes it very seriously, but in the other hand just supports them and is a beautiful place to be in. So we've used a lot of natural timber. We've worked really hard on the acoustics. So it's a fantastic acoustic environment. You know, it's still lively, but, you know, you can always have a private conversation and not be overwhelmed with circulation noise. So our interior designer, Zoe Tesla Taylor, had a strong theme of portals. So each time you enter one of these simulation suites, you know, you feel like you're entering through a portal. So there's kind of like a celebration that you're leaving a circulation space, going into a very special place. And they're framed in some stained plywood. So still a timber material. You can still see it's timber, but it has a different color. And the colors are also broadly aligned with the discipline type that they're teaching. So there's a bit of a subtle wayfinding layer to it as well. But walking through the building, you know, it feels light-filled, it feels serene, which was definitely how we wanted it. We wanted it to feel not like a school and not like a university. So it doesn't have, you know, it's a serious space, I'd say, in a way, but it doesn't have that kind of very kind of institutional academic feel that a university might have either. So to me, it feels light and uplifting, which was what we were aiming for.
The triple height foyer is both a social condenser and a symbolic space, animated by three blanks, a suspended artwork by Auntie Kim Wanden and Christine Joy that connects the project to First Nations culture and custodianship.
How the client works with First Nations is quite impressive, and there was always an aspiration about getting some local arts in the area. So early days, we knew something was going to happen. We designed the entry atrium to be able to walk into the building. You can see where you've got to go. You can read the building. You know that there's three levels. You know the stairs there, the lifts there. You understand, you can get your bearings with this idea that there is some art that is welcoming and greeting you into this space. So as the project progressed, Arnie Kim and Christine Joy joined the team, and we started talking and working through what this could be. And what we landed with wasn't the first idea and wasn't the first thing. There was even prototypes of other pieces of art that went in the space, and we all just honestly looked at each other and go, it's not quite meeting expectations. But as this one developed, it took on some real meaning, and it's really got some traction, and we worked with them. They took ownership. They're the artists of the blanks and the sculpture, and so there was a design intent there that they were working through, and we helped them with scale and proportions and how we could hang them. And it was the colours that were being proposed for it were colours of the orca in Australia over here, and so that's sort of connecting with the earth and the country that we've got. We showed them what it was looking like in the space, and then that influenced some of the colour decisions and some of the nuances and how we're going to shape this. So the Valang is a woven basket that was used as sort of a primary source of gathering prior to white settlement, and something that through our First Nations consultation was something that sort of came to be where it represented health and well-being, and it was the object that brought life and food and threw around. So it's a woven structure. So then we worked with, well, how are we going to deliver sort of this large oversized woven structures that, you know, are meeting building regulations, that are doing what it needs to do, and are quite aspirational or engulfing. But we end up working with a manufacturer that used laser cut timber edgings that sort of wove in amongst themselves, and you know, there's only just pin connections between each one, and they're just meticulously sort of clipped together, and it forms this beautiful object which we hung from the ceiling. And there's three of them that situated in different orientations so that you get different glimpses out them from the boardroom or from the entry, and you walk in and there's a skylight that sits in between, so you can walk in and you can look up and connect with sky country, and the three belongings are floating in amongst them. And as you move up the building, you experience them up close, so the stair brings you really close to one where you can almost touch it. And then you can appreciate them from back. So there was a lot of work and sort of, you know, working through the scale and the orientation, but it was a really, really nice collaboration.
Technology is embedded throughout the center to enhance learning and prepare students for real-world challenges. And this extends to the project's MEP systems.
I guess the extra layer to that, across all these spaces, each of the spaces have, whether it's a classroom or a simulation space, they've got cameras and microphones that can record but also stream, so that if you missed class one day, or if you wanted to reflect back on a simulation you did earlier in the day or earlier in the week or months ago prior to an exam, you can look up and you can watch and you can have playback. But you mentioned it's not an easy feat, and we worked with consultants, ACOM, across this project, and it's about establishing the brief because it gets quite technical very quickly. So try and understand the core functional requirements. What are those expectations that we're all, any layman is trying to get out of the building at the end of the day, trying to record that. And then it's actually managing it through the process, because from the original briefing to opening the facility, years go past and people working in the engineering firms change, people working on client side changes. And so it's controlling that information. And also the technology changes really quickly. So it's managing that change and managing those expectations throughout the control. When that's where we found the most time was spent was actually coordinating with controlling, but also just keeping an eye on it and making sure, because this, we didn't touch on it, but this was a procured as a design and construct procurement system. So we were novated under the contractor to deliver the building. So the documents were only produced to a certain percentage, and then we completed the documentation with the contractor. So then that's where there was sort of performance criteria, and then actually working through with the contractor and with the client's IT team as well to manage those expectations. So it was complex. But the one thing that did sort of unravel that we had to work through with the contractor on site was some of the cable links and just making sure that the data specification, there's certain links that we have to be between to be able to keep a level of data control and to maintain data speeds. And realizing that once you sort of articulate around all the structural moves, so there was, I guess, the original design response where it was all working. So we had to be adaptable, but luckily, and just the way we designed the building, that there was the ability to move some things around in terms of the grid structure. We knew that everything was fitting. We knew what bits we can touch. So we were able to, I guess, shape the building as that detail came through.
With a tightly constrained budget established from the outset, the construction phase required careful navigation of competing priorities in close collaboration with the contractor and project team.
It's a defined budget, so there was no moving on the budget. And the construction phase, this was a design and construct procurement. So we prepared the documentation it was 70% complete. That went out to market, a contractor was selected. We were then novated under the contractor. So we then completed the construction phase as the contractor being our client. So there was challenges all through that, because the contractor side, they're trying to find efficiencies, they're trying to deliver the building, they're contracted to do X, Y, and Z, and they've allowed for what they have in their tender process. And there's some constructability details that we need to work through and go through and all of that. One aspect of that where, I guess, documentation being a percentage complete is we had some tensile wires that were up in the building, and we documented that they were there and they needed to meet X criteria, and that was the fall protection from the upper level. And there was structural steel above that was scoped. But how they all worked together, there was a lot of complexities around that where end up resolving in some extra steel being put in to support that. And that was because of the actual installation of the tensile wires, where they can't tense them all up at the same time. They actually do them individually. So as you do that, the structure can potentially warp up and about. So you're having these conversations with the contractor about how can we resolve the intent within the constraints that they're contracted to deliver. And they have to deliver the tensile wires and the fall protection, and they've got a dollar value that they have to work within. And we're working as a team, and we all, through all of our D&C processes, it really should be a collaborative response. And this one really was. And there's plenty of examples of that where the architect and the builder are working together to actually solve this. And we're all sitting back at the end of the day going, yeah, really proud of what we're doing. And through that process, we do need to be mindful that the contractor has needs that they need to meet. And if we're out there being a hindrance to all of that, then you're missing the opportunities to actually do things more efficiently, find opportunities within the project. But building a relationship early with the contractor enables just opportunities to go through. And you learn a lot from the contractors on site if you can get a good relationship as well.
For Jaden and Ruth, the circulatory flow of the interior's diverse spaces, combined with a sense of discovery and calming views to the outdoors, stood out as a particularly proud achievement.
What I really like is we've managed to sort of fold the circulation, how you move through the building at each level, in slightly different orientations. And up right up on the top level, we've pulled the circulation down so that it runs past the southern facade that overlooks the town park. And it's provided this passageway that you've actually got to go and find. And that's where we've got more focused booth study area. So it's this really nice spot where you can sit down, do your work, you can study, but you've got this really nice sheltered view over the park. And that's what I love. And it's, you know, this idea of exploration that we talk about in the plan, and you look around in the model, but then seeing it delivered and go, okay, I'm walking through this building, there's a lot going on here, it's really interactive, and you get up here and it's like, you can breathe, yeah, I'm relaxed. Look at this view. I could sit down here and I could do some work. And, you know, it's like you found a little haven up the top.
One of the best spaces for me is the triple height atrium. So we've gathered a circulation and vertical circulation around a linear atrium. And we've kept that idea of learning on display within that. So you can stand on the bottom and you can look up into the simulation suites and you can see interesting things happening. You can see people circulating. So it feels very lively and connected, and you feel part of something bigger. And it's everything, you know, there's students learning childcare, you know, there's a little simulated creche, you know, with the tiny furniture, and then the people learning aged care, there's actually, you know, a whole aged care unit, but with half height walls. So you kind of, it's like you're kind of walking in a floor plan in a way, but they use all the actual spatial conditions to practice, you know, getting someone out of a bed, getting them into the shower. So all of that is on display, and it makes it a very vibrant feel inside the building. I think that's the thing that impresses me most.
By uniting architecture, technology, and community purpose, the Kangen Institute's Health and Community Center of Excellence stands as a vital piece of Broadmeadows' revitalization story. It is both a pathway to fulfilling careers in the caring professions and a beacon of opportunity for one of Melbourne's most diverse communities. Before we close out this episode, I always try to gain some additional insight from our guests about the greater industry. I was curious what Ruth and Jaden thought were the top three issues architecture firms or the practice of architecture face in Australia.
Definitely the rising cost of construction, which I know is happening in your part of the world as well. So what we're seeing is projects either not getting through a feasibility phase, so the building costs just can't, you know, it just doesn't stack up as a viable development. And then we've had also ones, projects that we've actually started on, but then, you know, due to rising costs or an unfavorable tender, they've had to go on hold. So that's a challenge for us, you know, with our workforce, so rapidly having to redeploy people. It's kind of a stop-start type environment. Although probably in recent months, we feel like it's stabilizing a little bit. You know, there are different parts of Australia. For example, over in West in Perth is quite buoyant at the moment. Brisbane, We're hosting the 2032 Olympics, so there is a lot of activity pending there and design and construction, which is incredibly exciting. Yeah, so Melbourne's probably been the most sluggish for a little while, but we feel, I don't know, maybe it's spring. We feel like things are picking up a little bit. The other thing I thought about, which could be a whole podcast in itself, is just the changing work patterns. So Melbourne particularly had incredibly onerous COVID lockdowns, and we all worked from home for almost 2 years. So, and that pattern of working has remained. For example, here in the studio, we have 4 days in the studio, 1 day at home. So people are still valuing that ability to work from home. And that, of course, then has the knock-on effect to office accommodation within our CBD. So right now, I can look out our window on the 25th floor here in the centre of Melbourne, and there's not many cranes on the sky on the skyline. There's not many towers being built. In fact, you'd definitely count them on one hand. So that's having an impact on the workflow and the pipeline in Australia.
The one I might add to that, the third, is probably, we talked about it a bit today, but you know, technology being one aspect of it, but it's the increasing complexity of everything that we do, whether it's the technology, whether it's standards, whether it's everything's getting more onerous or more complex and more nuanced, and just being on top of that, making sure that you get the right team with you and consultants that are at the forefront of where things are moving, and then being across it yourself as a project. So there's just this constant learning that you're doing that is just, and especially with AI approaching, it's just rapidly growing.
I really enjoyed this conversation with Ruth and Jaden. I hope this episode sparks a new idea, helps you solve a problem that you've been working through, or inspires the mark that you want to leave on this world.
Look, personally, I'd love to just be remembered as a kind person, you know, giving what you can and helping as much as you can. Professionally, and probably where I'm at now, it's something that I've been really driving over the last, I don't know, eight or so years has been, so my pathway to architecture was through TAFE and not through a university pathway. I guess I went TAFE through to uni, and I really valued that experience at TAFE, and I feel I've now delivered multiple TAFE projects, and to a very, I think, fortunate enough to say, working with great teams and great people to quite a high standard, and I feel like our team has been lifting the bar on that vocation training facility work in Victoria and Australia. And I think that's something I'm very proud about, and making sure the people that are going through those vocation trainings are proud of what they're doing, and that it's not an alternative career, that it's something that is truly valued in society. We talked about it earlier about the short, you know, you're having shortfalls over in construction at the moment. You need people in there, and yes, you can pay them more. That's one aspect, but having facilities and training and just really elevating those pathways into your career is something that I'm really passionate about, and hopefully leaving a mark.
Totally agree with Jaden's kind of view of the world. You know, we have this huge privilege to shape places and spaces that can really positively impact people's lives. And I love to think of, you know, the projects that I've worked on and the people that are now living in them, working in them, studying in them. And, you know, we've had feedback over the years that it does make a difference. You know, it does. I had this beautiful client say that every time, you know, it's 20 years ago, we delivered a really high-tech lab for her. And I went back, you know, in recent years, and she said every time she walks in the door, she is so grateful to have the building and she loves it so much. That's a huge, it's just incredible to have that kind of feedback and know that design can make such a positive impact on people's lives. So I think that's what drives us.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, Visit rcat.com/podcast to see photos, details, and more related project and product information that we discussed today. While you're there, take a look around rcat.com. For over 30 years, RCAT has been the resource for AEC professionals to find the right products for their project. Try RCAT and see how their tools can save you time and money and help you get ahead on your next project. Visit rcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can support us by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this with your friends. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back to share more stories and lessons learned to help you navigate your next project.